I want to welcome you to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. I'm Tom Cooper, and I'm so glad you've joined me for this lesson. Today, we're talking about team strengths. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. My mentor, John Maxwell, says all players have a place where they add the most value, and Lead Yourself First is your system to help you become part of an amazing team and to see the strengths of the team members you have, the people that are right there around you, so that you and your team can produce at the highest level. And we all like to believe that we are the key person, that the company would not win without us. And if that's not something you've thought a lot about, there's a terrific book from Seth Godin called Linchpin, which I'm a big fan of, where he talks about how can you be a significant player even if you are not the one who is theoretically in charge, but you can make a big difference even in the role that you're in, whatever role you're playing. And it's really speaking to what John's talking about. All players have a place where they add the most value. And it's true that having key players is a big deal. It's important to our overall success, but understanding the value of the other people on the team leads to more success and greater success. Let me ask yourself this. Why is it that some people and some teams perform at a higher level than others? Because they understand and value the team members and team strengths. And sometimes we're frustrated because our bosses don't seem to be as smart as we are or as talented as we are. But they got to be the boss, so how did that happen? They might know things that we don't know, and there's good news. Because you can learn the things that they know. You can learn how to do the things that they do and how to get better at those kinds of things. And I wish somebody had taught me this when I was earlier in my career. Now, before we jump into this lesson, my question is always, always about how are you going to act after this lesson. So apply, change, teach. What can you apply? What's an idea from today's lesson that you can use immediately? What's something that you can change in the way you're doing things? Or teach. Be a river, not a reservoir. You want to be able to share these ideas with other people. I've been looking forward to today's lesson. I look forward to it because I know that one is too small a number to achieve significance. There's nothing of substance, there's nothing of depth or importance that can be accomplished by a single person. Teamwork is the key, and no team is made up of superstars who can do everything equally well. Now, we're going to be spending some time in the next few minutes talking about some very important ideas. And if you can take one idea from today and put it into practice, it's going to make a difference for you, and you'll be surprised at what you can accomplish. Now, for some of you, you're going to want some help doing this work, and if that's true for you, I've got a tool that is really helpful for this, and I promise at the end of the lesson, I'm going to share with you a way to do that. Fair enough? Well, as I mentioned, today I'm talking about teams and how we need to recognize something that John Maxwell calls the law of the niche, that all players have a place where they add the most value. And it's true. Each team requires lots of different kinds of skills. Even if you're great at one thing, you might be not so great at other things. Seeing, knowing, and valuing the contributions of others is foundational to growing your team capacity. And unfortunately, we often overvalue the things we're great at, and we undervalue the things that other people are great at. Years ago, I remember working with a team. We had some team members who were terrific at writing software, and we had other team members who were not. That wasn't their job to write software, but they were on the team. And the software people thought the non-software people, well, they thought they were useless. At the same time, what was it the software people actually did? They needed to know what kind of software to create. But did those software people like talking to, you know, actual people? Not really. People were frustrating. They were confusing and messy and emotional and self-contradictory. The software folks were not big fans of understanding the business or the business problems or the business people. Why should they bother with that? There was always somebody to tell them that stuff. At the same time, they really didn't appreciate that the people who helped them know what was needed, that those people were delivering value, at least as much value as the software itself. And as a result, they treated those team members with less respect than they deserved. It was painful. Where would those software developers have been without somebody to go talk to the business people, to understand and document what the business people needed, and to help train the users once the software was created? And that's exactly what John Maxwell is talking about in the law of the niche, that all players have a place where they add the most value. If you find that you're not clear on the value that the other team members are delivering, you might need to be reminded of this law, the law of the niche. So let's talk about the different kinds of strengths that team members might have. Some people are great at moving fast and making decisions, even if they're not perfect decisions. Some people are great at connecting with people. Some people are great at getting tasks done smoothly and efficiently. Some people can make sure that the processes we use are fair and the work is evenly spread out across the team. Some people are outstanding at getting the details exactly right every single time. And some people are good at more than one of those things. But here's the deal. Nobody is great at all of them all the time. Every team needs a variety of skills, a variety of strengths they bring to the problems you're solving at work. Here's what we know. Teams with diversity of gender, ethnicity, culture, and even brain power outperform teams that are more alike. And I'm going to say that again. Teams with diversity of gender, ethnicity, culture, and even brain power, diversity of brain power, outperform teams that are more alike. If you expect a team of individual superstars to be amazing, that's kind of a fable in our culture. We've all seen those so-called dream teams of amazing players that can't seem to deliver at the highest level. And it turns out, and the research is actually strong on this, that having a variety of strengths allows teams to think differently about problems and to come up with solutions that are a better overall fit. I was working with a team recently where one of the management team members was strong at making decisions. We'll call that guy Alex. Alex was good at finding the path forward and taking immediate action. Alex had a clear voice in the storm and was quick to get things moving again when they go off track. One of the other team members had different strengths. We'll call her Anusha. Anusha and Alex, they had a lot of conflict. Where Alex was quick to jump in, Anusha took stock of the situation before she would act. Where Alex was loud and out front, Anusha was more quiet and more tied into the needs of the other team members than Alex was. Alex was quick and direct. He moved fast, and he made decisions, and he made a lot of them. And he made sure that he was going to make a decision quickly and that action would be taken as soon as possible. And what was interesting is that Anusha was more quiet and more tied into the needs of the team members than Alex was. Alex was quick and direct. Anusha worked with a more deliberate pace and made sure the team members had what they needed in order to be successful. Alex, if he was being honest, he thought Anusha was useless. She was slow, she wasn't able to jump in and do things. When she was around, he found he always had to jump in and fix things because she just wouldn't act. But here's the deal. When Anusha made decisions and she took action, she did it in a way that team members liked better, a lot better. Alex was likely to get stuff done, but he left a trail of dead bodies behind him. Completed tasks, quick decisions, and massive actions led to results, and he didn't value anything other than results. And the team could tell. To him, they were just cogs in the machine, and as far as Alex was concerned, one person was as good as any other. And it's fascinating because I was talking with a man who was a leader in a small company, and he said his boss actually said, "People are like batteries. When they get used up, I just get different people." Man, what a terrible, terrible boss. And that was kind of the way that Alex saw things too. Anusha had a different set of skills from Alex, and he found those skills useless, but she was able to think about the people side of things. She cared about people, and she could see the impact that decisions had on the people on the team. And she could see how procedures and policies might be seen as unfair to some, and she looked for ways to think through decisions before she took action. And it was true that she took longer to get started to take action, but her actions led to better long-term results. Activity is not accomplishment. Activity is not accomplishment. And that's something that Anusha naturally understood far better than Alex. People are different, and different is not wrong. Just because someone does things in a different way, that doesn't make them wrong. Alex's key strengths in moving fast and making decisions confidently and directing people to do things had paid off well for him. He'd been able to thrive in a fast-paced environment. But those strengths, when they were leaned on too heavily, they led him to overlook the important things, the people things. Anusha's strength in thinking about the impact on people and keeping things fair and equitable, they had led to her success. They're both managers in leadership positions, right? Her people strength was great, but if she took too long to assess the people impact and she didn't take action quickly enough, that would lead to problems. Both Alex and Anusha added value to the team, and both of them had weaknesses that limited their effectiveness. And this is something I want to take just a moment to point out, that our strengths are great. They're great, but a strength, when it's used too much, actually can become a weakness. A strength used too much can become a weakness. And that's one of the challenges that Anusha and Alex were facing in their organization. Each of them had leaned on their strengths too much. Now let's talk about another team. On this team, there was one brilliant and dynamic person on the team. And let's call him, I don't know, call him Tom Cooper. Now, Tom worked with Natalie. Natalie was an engineer's engineer. She had a degree from Virginia Tech, clear and logical mind. Tom was great at connecting with people, being verbal, and winning people to his way of thinking. He was good at the people stuff. He could make decisions, and he learned how to take risks that could lead to big payoffs. Natalie thought, well, if Natalie was honest, she thought Tom was broken, defective, that his mind was a mess. Tom was flighty. He spouted off ideas that were half-baked. He shifted gears so quickly she couldn't tell where he was going next. He was like ADD on steroids. In contrast to Tom's approach, Natalie was methodical, logical, detailed, and her facts were solid. Her analysis was spot on, and she could come up with complete solutions to complex problems. Her systems and solutions were accurate and precise. They were exactly right every time. How could it be that these two could work together? They were exact opposites, right? It's true, they were opposites, and each one drove the other one crazy. Tom thought, why does Natalie constantly shoot down my ideas? It's like she thinks there's a prize for killing the most of my ideas the fastest. Why can't Natalie give me a gut feel for whether something will work or not? Why does she need so much time to analyze things? Personally, Natalie liked Tom, but she found him very frustrating. Not only were his ideas flighty, but his facts? What facts? It's as though Tom thought close enough was good enough, as if they were playing a game where accuracy did not matter. Didn't he know that in our business, accuracy was critical? Tom had strengths that were important to the business. Natalie did too, but their strengths were different. And Natalie, Tom had weaknesses, and his differences from Natalie did make her crazy, reasonably so, and Natalie had weaknesses too. She was not able to make decisions quickly, and she constantly reanalyzed her decisions to see if she had done the best thing, if she'd made the optimal choice. Eventually, Tom and Natalie learned to appreciate their differences and develop a partnership at work that made them a formidable team. Now, what did it take to get them to be able to work together so smoothly? They each took a personality profile called the DISC assessment. And DISC is a system that says people are different, but they're predictably different. That we're different, and different is not wrong, it's just different. Different's not wrong, it's just different. So let's go over the different letters in DISC. And as I do, I want you to think about whether you see yourself in any of these descriptions. Now, I want to say, too, that none of these is right or good, and in contrast, the others are wrong or bad. It is what it is. So don't look at this and say, oh, I'm this and I should be that. That's not the case at all. So first, let's talk about D's. D's are direct. They're to the point. They focus on delivery, delegation, and driving toward results. In fact, results are all that matter to the D style. They're fast-paced. They have a bent toward action. They're going to quickly step in to fill in if there's a gap in leadership. If they believe there's a gap in leadership, they're going to be, bam, right on. They make decisions quickly. Even if their decision's not great, any decision is better than no decision. D's have zero problems having a conflict if that's what it takes to get to a decision and to deliver results, because D's love to work on delivery of results. It's critically valuable to them to get results. That's all they measure. Now, they love to work with people who are loyal, and they do worry. They're afraid of being taken advantage of by other people. That's a big concern for a D. So if you think about the four people I've talked about in today's lesson, can you think of anyone who sounded like a D? Well, if you said Alex, you're right. Alex is a hardcore D. He's almost off the charts in his D-ness. Now let's talk about I's. I's are influencers. They love people. They love to communicate and interact with others. Their nature's extroverts. They're spontaneous. They're friendly. They're often in the spotlight. They're active, they're emotional, they love to encourage others, they have endless ideas, and they have a story about everything. They're great at starting new things, but I's are not so great at finishing. They love being with people, and they despise routine. Now, what that means is that they start a lot of stuff that they don't finish, and they get bored very, very easily. And so they'll ignore the work that's boring. They just will just avoid the boring work forever if they can get away with it. They love being with people, they despise routine, and their deepest fear is rejection and loss of approval from other people. So as you think about our four people in today's lesson, who was the I? I hope you got it that I'm the I. I mean, I even used my name in the story, right? Now let's talk about, we talked about the D's, the decision makers, the delegators, we talked about the I's, the influencers. Now let's talk about S's. They're supportive people. The classic S is team-oriented. They're great at landing the plane. They finish the projects they start. They are loyal, and they work best in a team environment. They're easygoing. They're agreeable. They work at a predictable pace, and they're often really good listeners. S's do a great job of making sure that the work is evenly distributed, and they understand who is involved and in what way they're involved. And S's really, really don't like confrontation. That is so painful for them to get into that kind of a conflict. And in our story about Alex and Anusha, Anusha is our S. So we've talked about D, I, S. Now let's talk about C's. C's are conscientious. They are careful. They are compliant with standards. They're detail-oriented. They're logical. They're analytical. They might say, spontaneity, can we schedule that? I actually had a high C say that to me. C's are planners. They treasure elegance and perfection. They're careful, and they do not like being criticized. So people are different, but they're predictably different, and we need people with different skills than us to support us, to deliver those great results, and to make our teams really successful. So as you think about those D, I, S, and C descriptions, maybe you can see whether you're a D or an I or an S or a C. And what about other people? Well, there are two axes. It's almost like you've got the chart where you've got the X and the Y, and on the up and down side, you've got the question about how fast do people work. And so at the top, you may be fast. At the bottom, you might be predictable pace. And then if you look on the left side of your box, we'll call that chart a box, right? And we'll say the top is labeled fast and the bottom is labeled predictable. On the left side of that box, we're going to call that task-oriented, getting things done. And on the other side, we're going to say people-oriented. So if you've got your box, you've got fast on the top, predictable on the bottom, task on the left, and people on the right. And so I's and S's, they're more on that right side. They're more people-focused. D's and C's, they're on the left side. They're more task-focused. And if you see someone as being either task-focused or people-focused, that's going to give you a clue about whether they're an I and S or whether they're a D or a C. And then there's the pace of work. How quickly do people work? And what you find is that that you've got people who are more fast-paced in the way they do things, or if they might be more predictable-paced or slow-paced in the way they go about it. So D and I people tend to be at the top of your box. They tend to be fast-paced, less patient, frankly. And then C's and S's, they tend to be on the bottom. They tend to be more predictable. So if you can understand those two things about the other person, you can guess where they might be on the scale. You've got the one thing is, are they task-oriented or people-oriented? And the other one is, are they fast-paced or predictable pace? So if you're both fast-paced and task-oriented, you're a D. And if you're fast-paced and people-oriented, that's an I. If you're predictable pace and people-oriented, you're an S. And if you're predictable pace and task-oriented, you're probably a C. And once you know a little bit about how people are wired, you can begin to deal with how they are predictably different. For example, if you're communicating with a D, Ds are not patient people. You want to be brief, be brilliant, and be gone. You want to ask about results. Ask what, not how. Ds get mired in the details on the how. They don't care. They just want the result done. Focus on those results. If you need to talk about a problem, you've got to get to the point, and then you have to outline exactly how the problem impacts results. If you don't talk about results, a D is not going to listen. If you're working with an I, you want to let them talk. They have lots of words to get out, and you want to allow time for them to make a personal connection. Time to socialize is not wasted time with an I. Now, you might need to help them stay focused, but they're going to have lots of ideas, and you want to not squelch their ideas. You don't want to hit an I with too many details at once. If you've got a lot of details, and as an I, I'm telling you, this is so true. If you give me too many details, my eyes glaze over and I fall over dead. But you can follow up with details in writing, because eyes in person will get overwhelmed with those details and they'll forget. But I can go back and read details and lock in and get that right when I have time to do that. If you're going to have, if you have a lot of material to cover, several short conversations are more impactful than one long conversation with an I. All right, let me give you a tip about dealing with an S. You want to be friendly with them. You want to connect with them as a person. What are the things that they care about outside of work? They're people-oriented. You can't be overly aggressive with them, and they might interpret aggressive differently than you do. I know I can come across as super intense and aggressive with S's. I don't mean to, but it's just my natural approach is in conflict with their natural approach, and I have to be careful about that. You need to help them understand the goal for delivery and everybody's role in achieving that goal. The goal and the roles, who's doing what. They also need process time to work through changes and plans because they're thinking about a lot of things that you might not be thinking about. Certainly they think about things I don't think about. And my favorite, seriously, C's are absolutely my favorite. C's need details. They need every single detail always forever. they need you to confirm your facts. If you mess up on a detail, a C is going to know, and it's going to hurt your work with them because they're going to believe that you're not a reliable source of information. You want to be precise in the things that you explain, and you have to be patient. You have to answer their questions. All right, we're about at the end of the lesson, and I want to just cover a few of the things that we talked about today as you think about creating your personal action plan. First, people are different, but they are predictably different. Difference not wrong. Remember the law of the niche. All players have a place where they add the most value. What value do you bring to the team? And what value do the other people on the team bring? Difference not wrong, and their strength might just be a weak point for you. And you might be believing that their strength is not important because it's not something you're good at. Is the person direct to the point and focused on results? They might be a D. Are they people-oriented and super friendly? They might be an I. Are they a great team player and deliver projects when they said they would? They could be an S. And if they're conscientious and make sure they're careful to get the details right, they might be a C. So what can you apply, change, or teach from this? Now, how can you take these ideas and put them into practice in your work? How can you see this, your strengths and other team members' strengths and maximize the value to the team? Now, you might be interested in learning more or spending some more time on this topic, and I want to offer you a DISC assessment. Now, there's a 30-page personalized custom report for you based on your answers on the DISC assessment. It's really powerful. And it's only $97 a person. This is a great report. It's the full Maxwell method of DISC report. You might have seen some stuff online that's kind of a lightweight thing. This is a detailed 30-page personalized report, and it's a bargain at just $97. Now, if you'd like some help figuring out exactly how this applies to you and how to put it into practice, I give you a personalized debrief option. That's $197. That includes the full report and the debrief with me. During the debrief, I'm going to explain the results. I'll answer every question you have about the report, and I'll guide you to an action plan based on your specific situation. And finally, there's a team workshop at just $249 a person. That includes the report and group training where we go over the results, what the results mean, and the impact on how your team can perform, how you work as a team, where the team's strengths are, and team challenges, how to improve communication on your team, and so much more. If that sounds interesting to you, drop me an email, tom@brighthillgroup.com. tom@brighthillgroup.com. We'll get it set up. Hey, thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.